one out the night before or zap it in the morning. Life within doors has few pleasanter prospects than a neatly arranged and well-provisioned breakfast table. Nathaniel Hawthorne. Lunch. Chomping through samey-samey sandwiches or slurping your way through bowl after bowl of soup can get a wee bit monotonous. So I try to create a bit of lunchtime variety with different textures. Maybe a bento box or a ploughman's lunch, consisting of some crumbly, as sharp as they make it, cheddar, whole grain crackers, slices of green apple, some radishes, a teeny pot of sambal, a slice of prosciutto, and some roasted almonds or pepitas, a grown-up lunchbox. Another favourite lunch is just a bag of salad, poured into a bowl, and then I search through the fridge to see what will pep it up. Maybe a few slices of dry-fried halloumi or chorizo, sprinkled with lemon or balsamic. Avoid balsamic glaze, the work of the devil. Ring the changes with some fresh Vietnamese rice paper rolls. These are a delicious low-fat option, and having the dried wrappers in the cupboard make them very convenient. They keep indefinitely. Dip a couple of the stiff wrappers in warm water, then lay them on paper towel to dry. Pour boiling water over a small amount of rice vermicelli noodles and rinse well. Then assemble a bit of avocado, grated carrot, a slice of cooked chicken, some rice noodles, shredded lettuce, and any fresh herbs you have. Mint and basil work well, on the wrapper. Whatever you want, really. Just don't put too much in or you won't be able to roll it properly. Add a bit of sweet chili sauce or hoisin. Make sure the filling is in the center of the wrap. Then fold in both sides and roll tightly from top to bottom. If you lay the mint leaves or half-sliced prawns on the wrap first, you can see them through the skin and they look very pretty. You can make an easy dipping sauce by mixing 2 tablespoons of hoisin with 1 tablespoon of peanut butter. If this sounds complicated, it's not. There are lots of tutorials on YouTube, and once you've tasted them, you'll be hooked. I think it's worthwhile splurging on really beautiful, freshly baked bread once in a while. It's perfect for sandwiches the first few days. Then it's toast time, or toasted cheese sandwiches, and finally we're in breadcrumb and crouton territory. It's still worth it just for that taste on day one. The better you store it, the longer it will stay fresh. The best way to do that is keep it in a brown paper bag, then wrap a tea towel around it, and just keep it on the kitchen counter. Of course, bread also freezes really well. While we're on the subject of toasted cheese sandwiches, look up Jamie Oliver's #1 toasted cheese sandwich. It will blow you away. It even has a cheese crown. I feel my arteries hardening just typing the words. Luncheon. As much food as one's hand can hold. Samuel Johnson, A Dictionary of the English Language, 1755. Dinner ideas. The 80-20 rule applies to my recipes as well as to my wardrobe. I use the same 20% of recipes 80% of the time. Here are some of my favourites that you can use as a jumping-off point and experiment to your taste. 1 store-bought barbecue chicken equals 5 main meals. Day 1. Chicken and oven-roasted vegetables. Carve off a breast and serve with roasted vegetables and giant Israeli couscous. Fry a chopped French shallot, put the couscous into the pan to toast a bit, then add stock and simmer for 10 minutes until done. Toss in some chopped baby spinach. Day 2. Burritos. Shred some leg and thigh meat and add to a warmed burrito with avocado and a mini tin of mixed beans. Top with grated cheese and shredded lettuce. Day 3. Vietnamese chicken salad. Shred the other breast and make a Vietnamese salad with shredded cabbage, spring onions, and mint. Pick the remaining meat off the bones and put in the fridge. Make stock using the bones. Cover the carcass with water in a large pan and add an onion, a couple of celery stalks, a chopped up carrot, and a few peppercorns. Simmer for an hour or two on low heat, otherwise it will evaporate. Strain. Let it cool, and then put in the fridge. Day 4. Dumpling soup. Skim the fat off the refrigerated stock and heat half of it in a pan. Make dumplings with the leftover chicken, a spring onion, some ginger and garlic, whatever you have really. Fold up in wonton wrappers and cook in hot broth for about 5 minutes. Sprinkle with shredded spring onion. Day 5. Risotto. Heat the remainder of the stock with a pinch of saffron in a small saucepan. In a frying pan, melt a tablespoon of butter and a little olive oil, and cook a small chopped onion or a French shallot until soft. Add half a cup of arborio rice and fry until translucent. Add a quarter cupful of dry white wine and stir until it is absorbed. Gradually stir in the hot stock, bit by bit, until the rice is the right texture. About 20 minutes of stirring and adding. Add some Parmesan cheese and serve with a green salad. Singapore noodles, adapted from One is Fun by Delia Smith. Boil the kettle. Place 1 heaped dessert spoon dry shrimp and 3 dried Chinese mushrooms in a bowl. Cover with boiling water and soak for about 30 minutes. Drain, keeping the mushroom water, then chop the mushrooms into small shreds, discarding the hard stalks. Soak 75 grams, 2.5 ounces, rice noodles in a bowl of boiling water for a few minutes and then drain. Don't over-soak or they will fall apart when you stir-fry. Meanwhile, heat up 2 tablespoons oil in a frying pan and, while that's heating, assemble together on a plate the shredded mushroom, dried shrimps, 1 chopped onion, 2 chopped bacon rashers, 1 chopped garlic clove, and 1 tablespoon grated ginger. When the oil is hot, throw them all in, stir well, then reduce the heat to very low and let the ingredients cook gently for about 15 minutes. This slow cooking allows all the delicious flavors to permeate the oil. Then add 1 teaspoon Madras curry powder. Turn the heat up to medium. Add some shredded breast of a cooked roast chicken and 25 grams, 1 ounce, fresh or frozen peeled prawns, followed by the mushroom water and the 4 finely chopped spring onions. Add the noodles to the pan and toss well. Finally, add 2 tablespoons soy sauce and 2 tablespoons sherry or Zhaojing rice wine. Toss again and serve with a green salad. I cook with wine. Sometimes I even add it to the food. W.C. Fields. Healthy sweet potato skins. Preheat the oven to 200 degrees centigrade, 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Prick 1 sweet potato in several places. Microwave for 7 minutes on a kitchen towel, then put in the oven on baking paper for 30 to 40 minutes. Dry fry 1 drained mini tin of corn in a frying pan with some Mexican chili seasoning. Don't keep stirring it. Let it roast and get browned. Mix it with 1 drained tin of black beans. Separately, fry a small onion or French shallot in a little butter or olive oil until translucent and add to the bean mixture. Scoop out the flesh of the spud, mash, and mix with 2 tablespoons cream cheese, 3 tablespoons Greek yogurt, a couple of chipotle peppers from a tin with adobo sauce or a dash of Tabasco, pepper and salt. Add the bean mixture and some chopped coriander. Put into the skins, add a bit of grated cheddar on top and grill for about 5 minutes until brown. Alternative fillings. Fry a chopped French shallot in a little butter. Add a couple of handfuls of baby spinach and a tin of chickpeas. Mash the sweet potato flesh with cream cheese and Greek yogurt. Stir in the onion, spinach and chickpea mixture. Add S&P. Pop back in the skins and grill with cheese on top. If you're in the mood for a little meat, fry a chopped onion or shallot, add 100 grams, 3.5 ounces lamb mince, 1 chopped red chili and a pinch of cumin or 1 teaspoon miso and cook until golden brown. Mix with the potato flesh, adding salt and pepper and a bit of mint if you have it. If you want to, you can spray the skins with a little oil while they're empty and put back in the oven for 5 minutes if you like them crispy. NB. You can bake more than 1 potato and keep them wrapped up in the fridge for up to a week. Reheat in the microwave or a gentle oven. Vietnamese clay pot chicken and rice. You can buy lovely small rustic Vietnamese clay cooking pots with lids from your nearest Chinatown or on Amazon. The first time you use one, you need to soak it beforehand for 24 hours and use a low heat for the first 5 minutes. Dice one or two chicken thighs and marinate them in a dessert spoon of corn flour mixed with 1 tablespoon soy sauce, 1 tablespoon Shaoxing rice wine, and a splash of sesame oil for about 30 minutes. Rehydrate a couple of dried Chinese mushrooms. Heat a tablespoon oil in a frying pan or wok. Add 1 finely chopped garlic clove and a dessert spoon of minced ginger. You can use a cheese grater for both of these. Cook for about 1 minute until fragrant, then stir in the chicken. When it starts to brown, add the chopped mushrooms, 70 grams, 2.5 ounces rice, 1 tablespoon soy sauce, and a dash of sesame oil. Keep stirring for a couple of minutes, then transfer the contents to your clay pot. Add 3 tablespoons of water and put over low heat for 5 minutes, then increase it slightly to medium. Check the pot every 10 minutes or so and add more water if necessary. It should take about 30 to 40 minutes total. But about 10 minutes before the end of cooking, you can add some chopped leafy greens such as bok choy or just stir in chopped baby spinach after you take it off the heat. Check for seasoning, put it on a trivet and enjoy. Tandoori chicken. I happily cheat and use a good quality bought tandoori paste here. I've made it from scratch and it's no better. Same with beef rendang and Malaysian curry pastes. Mix 1 tablespoon of paste with plain yogurt, a ratio of about 1 to 6 depending how strong you like the taste, and squeeze in 1/2 lemon. Either use 2 skinless chicken thigh fillets or 1 skinless breast fillet. If using thighs, remove any fat and small pieces of bone and whack with a meat hammer until thin and slash the surface a bit. If using a breast, cut it in 1/2 lengthways, beat with a meat hammer and slash. Then marinate in the fridge for 1 hour or overnight. Take out of the fridge 10 minutes before you're going to cook and preheat the grill. Grill the chicken until it is cooked through. Serve with plain steamed rice and a green salad or in wraps with lettuce, yogurt and mint. Keep leftovers and use in wraps, salads and sandwiches. Miso lamb chops. Umami lick your fingers chops. This marinade also works miracles on pork, chicken and fish. Mix 1 tablespoon white miso with 1 tablespoon soy and 1 tablespoon mirin. Spread over your lamb cutlets, marinate and then grill. Adapted from Lighten Up by Jill Duplay. Char siu pork pancakes. Like duck pancakes, but made with pork. Get a small piece of pork fillet from the butcher, about 10 to 15 centimeters, 4 to 6 inches long. Marinate it in 1 tablespoon hoisin, 1 tablespoon honey, 1 tablespoon soy sauce, 1/2 teaspoon sesame oil, and a pinch of 5 spice powder. Cover and refrigerate for a couple of hours or overnight. Halve a small Lebanese cucumber lengthways and remove the seeds. Cut into matchsticks. Do the same with a spring onion, then chill them both while you cook the pork. Heat the oven to 200 degrees centigrade, 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Place the pork on a rack over a small pan half filled with water. This will stop it from drying out. Cook for about 15 to 20 minutes, basting with the marinade a couple of times. Towards the end, brush with honey and pop under the grill briefly to brown. Remove and let it rest for a few minutes. Meanwhile, steam some frozen Peking duck-style pancakes available from Asian supermarkets. To serve, spread a little hoisin onto a pancake, add a matchstick or two of spring onion and cucumber, and a slice of pork and roll up. Delicious, easy, and special. Goes well with a plain green salad. Actually, everything goes well with a plain green salad. Teriyaki chicken. I regularly make a double portion of this to use in rice paper rolls, or I wrap sushi rice around chopped up pieces to make a non-seaweed sushi. Put equal measures, maybe 1/4 cup, each of soy, sake, and mirin, into a little saucepan and simmer for 5 minutes. Allow to cool, then marinate 4 flattened chicken thigh fillets in the sauce, or 2 breasts cut in 1/2 lengthways, then flattened. Grill or fry until golden. Great with steamed rice and salad. Sometimes I serve this for myself in a bento box. With salad, rice, and a beautiful chopped-up chilled orange afterwards, all neatly arranged in the compartments. Stuffed chicken thighs. These are delicious and can be eaten hot or cold, which is why I usually cook 4 thighs at a time, 2 for dinner and 2 for leftovers. Flatten and trim 4 thigh fillets. Mix up a small quantity of sage and onion stuffing from a packet with boiling water, allow to cool, then place in a sausage shape along the center of each thigh. Roll them up and then wrap bacon around each one. Pop on a small oven tray lined with baking paper and put in the oven for 40 minutes at 180 degrees centigrade, 350 degrees Fahrenheit, or until they are golden brown all over, turning them halfway through. The title doesn't really do it justice. Lamb shank and bean mash. A bear hug of a dish. Lightly drizzle a lamb shank with olive oil, slip a sprig of rosemary and a couple of garlic cloves in their skin underneath, and roast in the oven at 180 degrees centigrade, 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 40 minutes. Remove the rosemary and slip the garlic out of its skin. Drain the worst of the fat away, then rinse and mash a can of cannellini beans or butter beans into the garlicky oil. Serve with a lamb and a crisp green salad. Baby corn and noodle fritters, adapted from taste.com.au. Since I've got my new non-stick frying pans, which require almost no oil for frying, I have become obsessed with vegetable fritters. Soak about 40 grams, 1.5 ounces, dried rice noodles in boiling water for 3 minutes until softened. Drain and cut up with kitchen scissors. Combine 2 chopped spring onions, a packet of baby corn cut into small slices, 1 chopped long red chili, 2 tablespoons soy, 1 tablespoon oyster sauce, and a dash of sesame oil. Add a scant 1/4 cup of self-raising flour and 2 beaten eggs. If it needs to be wetter, add another. Pour a small amount of oil into a frying pan and fry spoonfuls of the mixture. Drain on kitchen towel. These are best served just out of the pan, but extras will keep happily in the fridge and are nice cold, or just reheated in a dry frying pan. Fritters are a great way to use any leftovers. Chop up leftover roast meat and veggies. Just add a couple of eggs and flour and fry them up. Linguine with clams. This recipe is from Nigella Lawson's How to Eat, which has an excellent chapter on cooking for 1 and 2. This is an absolute favourite, worth making just to hear the clatter of the clamshells. Nigella writes so beautifully, but here, for the sake of brevity, I have paraphrased. Soak 200 grams, 7 ounces, little clams, vongole, in cold water to get rid of any sand. Cook 150 grams, 5 ounces, linguine, in boiling salted water. Undercook it slightly, as you'll finish it off in the frying pan with the clam juices. Mince 1 clove of garlic. Gently fry it in 1 tablespoon of olive oil and crumble in 1/2 a dried red chili. Drain the clams, throwing away any that are open, and add to the pan. Pour in a glass of white wine and clamp a lid on. In 2 minutes, the clams should open up. Add the drained pasta and swirl about some more. Chuck out any clams that have failed to open. Add a tablespoon of parsley to the pan and shake about, then dish up, sprinkled with another tablespoon of parsley. Nigella finishes the recipe by saying, "Cheese is not grated over any pasta with fish in it in Italy, and the rule holds good. You need add nothing. It is perfect already." Absolutely. One final story on this subject. Lucullus was a politician and renowned gastronome in ancient Rome. One evening his steward, hearing that he was not having company for dinner, served him a pretty average meal. Lucullus told him off, saying, "It is precisely when I am alone that you are required to pay special attention to the dinner. At such times you must remember, Lucullus dines with Lucullus." Lucullus knew his worth, and you should too. Takeaways. Find your voice. Try new ingredients and recipes. There's nothing to lose. I can't be bothered. Pah! Of course it's worth it because you are worth it. Cooking is an important element of self-care. outfox the supermarket bosses and make it work for you. Explore ethnic supermarkets. Visualize how health food nourishes you and gives you energy in every sense. Review the tips and incorporate the ones that work for you. Search out great recipes for one and keep them in a file. I've listed over 40 suggestions for solo meals. Try one tonight. I dare you. Chapter 6. Solo Finances. The importance of money when you live alone. Writing a financial blueprint. Budgeting, saving, investing. This is no time to be asleep at the wheel. Being on top of your finances is important to everyone, but when you live alone, it must go to the very top of your priority list. I cannot overstate how crucial it is. You are not just self-reliant, but also self-funded. Friends and relations can provide an emotional safety net, but when it comes to cold, hard cash, you alone are responsible. The fact is that most of us, harsh though it is, cannot rely on anyone else to take care of us financially now or in the future, and that includes your relatives, your children, and the government. But it's okay. Build your own safety net in the shape of a financial blueprint and you'll be on track. If you feel you're already in a good place financially, you can skim this chapter, but you'd be in the minority, and look, your nose is growing longer. Statistics show that most women are not in control of their finances, and being alone makes that a particularly perilous position to be in. The singles penalty. First, the bad news. We pay a premium for living alone, but you already knew it, didn't you? You don't have to be Einstein to work out that with no one to share the bills, a larger percentage of our income goes towards living expenses, even though many of them are the same as a couple, or family, or whole hippie commune would pay. Rates, insurance, water, electricity, gas, Netflix, internet and car expenses are virtually identical. We can and do pay huge premiums when it comes to booking holidays, hotel rooms or rental cars. It is a bitter pill to swallow, but the financial odds are squarely stacked against us. The statistics make for sober reading. The first four figures are from the US, the rest are from Australia. 47% of women over 50 are single, and 50% of marriages end in divorce. In the first year after a divorce, a woman's standard of living drops by 73% on average. Of the elderly living in poverty, 3 out of 4 are women, yet 80% of these women were not poor when their husbands were alive. 90% of all women will be solely responsible for their financial well-being within their lifetime. Only 12% of women think their superannuation will be enough for retirement. Source, Financial Literacy Foundation, 2008. Half of all women don't know how much money they'll need for a comfortable retirement. Source, Financial Literacy Foundation, 2008. The average woman retires with half the super balance of the average man. Source, ASFA, 2011. Life expectancy for women is currently 84, but it's going up, and you need to factor that in. Source, ABS. 40% of all retired single women live below the poverty line. Source, Industry Super Australia. I know, the numbers are depressing, but use them as a powerful incentive not to become a statistic. You need to be in control of your money, never the other way round. Dealing with finances is the final frontier of independence. This chapter outlines some clear steps to get you there. I get it. I didn't want to think about money either. Before I wrote this chapter, I reorganized my cutlery drawer, did my tax return, mended a hole in a cardigan, cleaned the filter on the air conditioner, washed the dog, and put a vase on eBay. You get the picture. Displacement activities, I think they're called. Putting it off, in other words. Finances are not my great passion, but I do recognize that they are so important, I have to turn towards, not away from, the monetary nitty-gritty. Now that I am on top of it, I'm happy to share the good news that it, like some of life's other great pleasures, isn't complex, doesn't take too long, and gives you an immense feeling of satisfaction when you're done. The principles of money management for those of us who live alone are exactly the same as for everyone else. Why wouldn't they be? It is just a case, once again, of putting them into practice. Tedious but true. It is like exercise or a diet. It only works if you make a concerted effort. So put it in your diary and take action. Sigh. I really don't want to sound like a bully, but I also don't want you to find yourself disempowered, having left it too late, drowning in financial quicksand, with no lassie on hand to save you. Woof. If you're worried about any one of these things, how much money you have, paying off your credit card in full every month, funding retirement, your ability to pay an emergency expense, not being able to afford a holiday, not saving enough money, bills, debt, never being able to treat yourself, then you need to make a financial blueprint. Your financial blueprint. This 12-step financial blueprint is like an economic GPS, there to guide you. However, it is not actually about the money as much as it is about you. The blueprint is divided into two parts. The first part is about how you think. How you treat money is a reflection of you. What is important to you? How do you feel about money? Adjust your mindset. The second part is about what you do. Educate yourself. Budgeting. How long will your money last? Be smart with your money. Saving and investing. Build a team. Essential documents. Taking action. Never spend your money before you have it. Thomas Jefferson. 1. How you treat money is a reflection of you. How we treat our money speaks volumes about how we perceive and value ourselves. If we aren't powerful with money, we aren't powerful. What is at stake here is not money. It's far bigger. This is about your sense of who you are and what you deserve. Lasting net worth only comes when you have a healthy and strong sense of self-worth. Brilliantly said, Suze Orman. That is so insightful and rings so true. Your money is an extension of you, so how you think, act, and feel about your money is a reflection of how you perceive and value yourself. It starts with self-worth. The most financially successful people, from unknowns to Warren Buffett and Richard Branson, all share that sense of self-worth and confidence, and confidence begets confidence. It reflects. 2. What is important to you? Money matters because it determines the options open to you and lessens the gap between where you are now and where you want to be. I hate being told what to do and don't like fixed degustation menus in restaurants for that precise reason. And I want to live life my way. That's what financial independence gives you. Before we get into the numbers part of the blueprint, articulate what is important to you so that you know what you're aiming for. Answer the following questions. There are no right or wrong answers. The point of the exercise is to define the role money plays in your life. Picture the life you want to lead. How do you want to feel? How do you see yourself? Where will you live? How would others describe the way you live, having spent time with you? What's important to you? Seeing your family or children regularly? Feeling secure? Passionately pursuing your interests or exploring the world? All of the above. What personal goals would you like to achieve this year and over the next 5 years? How do you plan to achieve them? Have you got any secret ambitions that no one knows about and that people would be quite surprised to discover? What do you need to help you get there? What's the time frame? How do you define financial security? Is it not worrying about bills? Treating yourself without having to justify it? Not having to work? Knowing exactly how much you have? And that it will last as long as you do. The real measure of wealth is how much you'd be worth if you lost all your money. Author unknown. 3. How do you feel about money? It's important to be clear about how you perceive money, as it informs our feelings, and it is feelings that spur us to action. What associations does money have for you? Pleasure, fear, jealousy? Worry, guilt, freedom, anxiety, ambivalence, joy? Does it bring people together or tear them apart? Or maybe you just don't want to think about it at all. Interestingly, the psychologist Valerie Wilson found that the four words most commonly associated with money are all negative. They are anxiety, depression, anger, and helplessness. Our parents and upbringing can profoundly influence our attitudes towards money. These perceptions can be quite hardwired, but it doesn't mean you have to behave in the same way. In my family, anything to do with money was my father's domain, and it was considered impolite to discuss it. When I got married, it was a model that I subconsciously adopted, and my now ex-husband looked after our joint finances. I find it amazing, looking back, how willing I was to relinquish that power. When my father died, I had to unravel a labyrinth of knotty financial affairs of which I had no knowledge. When my marriage ended, I had to trust others to report on our financial status, because I didn't know. And I realize now that the seeds of my divorce were sown in that ignorance. Never again. I know to the cent exactly how much I have and where it is. However you feel about money, acknowledge it and use it as an indicator to help define how you will approach your financial situation. When I was young, I thought that money was the most important thing in life. Now that I am old, I know that it is. Oscar Wilde. 4. Adjust your mindset. Many women feel powerless when it comes to money. Shake that vulnerability off your wings. It's important that you approach your blueprint in the right frame of mind. Ambitious, confident, and striding big Usain Bolt steps towards happiness. Be strong and think big. These might help you along the way. Pick and choose the ones that resonate. Increase your revenue. Work for as long as you can, doing anything that you can. It not only provides income and gives you the ability to borrow money to invest, but also gives you self-respect, makes you feel valued, engaged, and useful, and keeps your brain sharp. Don't talk yourself down at work. You can earn more. Agree your KPIs in your job and smash them, enabling you to ask for a salary rise. Try and freelance at something you're good at. Jump in. Being financially independent gives me an insulating layer of security. Security makes me confident, and confidence makes me happy. I control my money, not the other way round. I decide what to do with my money. I know I can make myself powerful with my money. Money directly affects my future happiness, so I need to understand it better than anyone else. I can ask for help, but I need to be the one pulling the strings. Being proactive is the way to go. It is never too late to start. Taking action is the way to kill fear. I think of myself as my own company, the Jane Company Limited. I am the CEO and CFO of the company, and I am responsible for the P&L, investment strategy, etc. 5. Educate yourself. One of the best ways to increase your confidence about money is to learn more about personal finance. No one will ever care about your money as much as you do, so it's important that you're comfortable with the language and principles involved. At the most basic level, there is nothing more to it than primary school arithmetic and some new vocabulary. If you feel you already have a good grasp, push yourself with more complex strategies. Do not be afraid to ask questions. Remember when we were at school and the good teachers knew that the only bad question was the one that hadn't been asked. There is so much good free information available. There are more books, seminars, websites, podcasts, and YouTube videos about personal finance than you can shake an abacus at, and it won't take long to find one that you like. My favorite is the best-selling The Barefoot Investor by Scott Pape. I cannot recommend this book highly enough. It bills itself as the only money guide you'll ever need, and it's true. Straightforward, no bullshit, practical, specific, and Australian. I have also signed up to Scott Pape's Barefoot Blueprint newsletter, which gives practical, independent advice so that you can go to a financial professional armed with concrete, well-informed suggestions. 6. Budgeting. Focus on the money you save rather than the money you spend. Think of ways to make yourself a little wealthier every day. Of course, budgeting and saving are two sides of the same coin, and it is important that you simply know what comes in and what goes out. Your budget needs to be kept updated, and you should have it at your fingertips. Don't think about a budget as being restrictive. It is just information to ensure that you are waving, not drowning. In fact, in this budget, there's a special section put aside for treats. Life is for living. Step 1. Have a guess at how much you spend over a month and over a year. Write it down. It's usually 25 to 50% less than you really do. Step 2. Work out the real number. List all your income sources, salary, dividends, eBay sales, etc. Then list all your outgoings, expenses. We live our lives forwards but understand them backwards. You need to work out how much you spend and what you spend it on. Get an online tracker, like the ones at sorted.org.nz or suzorman.com. Do an Excel spreadsheet or just buy an accounting notebook. There are lots of templates online which are useful as prompts to remember the less frequent, once-a-year expenses. Or try some of the new budgeting apps now available if they suit you. Go through your last year of bank and credit card statements line by line. Group your purchases, food, clothing, etc., and add the expenses to your budget. Print ATM receipts for a week and make a note of what you spend. Monitor the little things you usually buy with cash. It's not exactly a fun job, but once again, it is means to an end. An investment in knowledge pays the best interest. Benjamin Franklin. Make your own list of outgoings. Mortgage or rent, loans, credit card interest, utilities, gas, electricity, water, rates, doctor, dentist, optician, physio, prescriptions, medical expenses, mobile phone, computer maintenance, repairs, printer cartridges, domain names, car payment, insurance, rego, parking, petrol, servicing, repairs, tolls, fines, car wash, public transport, food, household items, alcohol, on a separate line as it can be cut down or out, dining out, takeaways, movies, theatre, hair, beauty, clothes, shoes, handbags, jewellery, household repairs, holidays, weekends away, insurance, health, house, contents, clubs, gym membership, books, subscriptions, Netflix, pay TV, magazines, iTunes, pet expenses, food, vet, kennels, grooming, gifts, hobbies, courses, night classes, charity donations, professional services, accountant, lawyer, financial advisor. Be honest with yourself. You need to establish the true costs of everything. Step 3. Does your income cover your expenses? What is the gap? If there is a gap, how do you intend to fill it? Think about the wants, new handbag, versus the needs, food. You have two simple options, reduce your spending or bring in more income. Money is the root of all evil, and yet it is such a useful root that we cannot get on without it, any more than we can without potatoes. Louisa May Alcott. 7. How long will your money last? Knowledge is power. And once you know how much money you have and how much you spend and owe, work out how long your money would last if you stop working tomorrow. Even if you are nervous about what you might uncover, just do it. Work out how much cash, liquid assets, you have right now, less any debts, and divide what is left by what you spend monthly. This worst-case scenario assumes you'll never work again or get income from any other sources, such as selling your house or investments or a pension. This figure will give you an indication of your financial health. Obviously, you'd like the number to be as high as possible. 10 or 20 years is better than a matter of months. Even if it is only a few months, at least you know what you have to do. The fitness analogy springs to mind. Eat less, exercise more, becomes reduce your costs and increase your income. After doing this calculation, you might feel like bundling up your belongings in a red spotted hanky and chancing your luck in the dark forest, but at least you'll know where you stand. While the numbers can be confronting, they can also provide comfort in their concreteness. When my in-charge-of-the-money father died, My mother was all at sea, terrified she would not have enough to get by. We did the same calculation for her and established that, even if she had to move into a care home and sell her house, she would run out of money when she was around 120. In the event, she died with grace and dementia in her early 80s, but at the time it put her mind at rest. If you find yourself having to fund years and years ahead, don't panic. Set a budget and seek advice from a reputable financial advisor to get you on track. See Section 10. It might not be easy, and you may not be going on holiday in the foreseeable future, and you might have to do a job you don't particularly like, and find yourself eating lots of tins of tuna, but at least you'll be in control. I'm willing to bet that whoever said, "Choose your passion, not your pension," had an inheritance, a tidy divorce settlement, or a trust fund. The rest of us just have to put our heads down and do what we have to do. Still got to pay the mortgage, Oprah. 8. Be smart with your money. The aim is to be financially organized and independent, living as you want, within sensible parameters, eventually without having to, or being able to, work. To achieve this, you need to live within your means and generate a surplus to invest. We have all become conditioned to expect a degree of comfort, even luxury, and many of our generation feel entitled to such a life. We're used to having the same toys, phone, clothes, car, home, holidays, as our friends. But we can't run with the pack on this one. Because of the significance of money when you live alone, because we are more vulnerable, we may not have a choice. We have to think twice about buying things we want but don't need. We need to save as much as we can. Every dollar spent now distances us a little from the life we want in the future. Think like a millionaire. They are much more motivated by long-term financial security than by impressing anyone in the short term. It is really important that you run your own race financially. Depending on your circumstances, you may need to be more purpose-driven, sacrifice more, and be more focused on where your money goes than your married friends. If you will live like no one else now, later you can live like no one else, is the advice from Dave Ramsey, financial consultant. And Henry Thoreau argued that wealth should be defined not by how many things we have, but by how much free time we have. So the less you want or need, the richer you are. If passion drives you, let reason hold the reins. Benjamin Franklin. Frugality includes all the other virtues. Cicero. To help you get there, make it a priority to pay off all your debts. Debt is bondage. Pay off your credit cards. Credit card debt is the most common cause of bankruptcy. And while you're at it, restrict yourself to only one credit card. The Barefoot Investor recommends getting rid of them all. Make sure it has a competitive rate of interest. Like most of us, I haven't got the time or the inclination to switch from card to card to get a better deal. Usually, if you ring your bank, they will lower the interest rate if you say you're going to move. Work out how much you can afford to put into savings each month and make sure you contribute the maximum super allowed. Roll your super into one fund and make sure you're paying the lowest fees possible. Have an emergency fund that's readily accessible with a 3 to 6 month supply of money in it. Make your banking as simple as possible. Stick to one bank, the online banks offer the best deals, and close down superfluous accounts. Speak to the bank and make sure the accounts you have are the best ones for you. Thrift used to be considered a virtue, but isn't valued now. But the tide may be turning, given the success of the cheaper supermarkets such as Aldi. People who shop there consider themselves smart and canny by paying lower prices without compromising on quality. I'm not interested in patronizing you by telling you to do your washing in the off-peak middle of the night, switch to home brands, or stop buying takeaway coffees. You know better than anyone where your own low-hanging fruit is for quick, attainable savings. It's your call. The aim is to get money to invest, and the two ways to achieve that are by increasing income or reducing consumption. A couple of simple thoughts that helped me put the brakes on were: do you want that pair of shoes more than future security? an extra night on holiday, or those special taps in your future home. Imagine the money you're about to spend as seeds that you could instead plant, invest, to grow more money. The substantial savings lie with the big expenses. Too many of us pay what Choice magazine calls the lazy tax by rolling over things like insurance rather than looking for better deals. Treat it as a game and keep a tally sheet of how much you save. Be Robin Hood. The big corporations, electricity, mobiles, do not make it easy to change plans or clarify the differences between them, but persevere. At the end of the day, it usually comes down to reading the small print in the PDS booklet, and many of the comparison sites are bogus. Look at mortgage or rent. Are you getting the best deal? Credit card. Slim down to one card only, no store cards, and get a card that has no fee, a lower interest rate, or more rewards. Pay it off in full every month. If you are charged for a late fee payment, call up and ask for it to be waived. Check every credit card statement to ensure all charges are accurate. In 2016, Australians were scammed out of $500 million. When shopping online, make sure the website starts with HTTPS, not just HTTP, to ensure security. See if you can find cheaper utility and mobile phone providers. Compare energy plans at the government-run site Energy Made Easy. Don't just auto-renew insurance without looking at alternative quotes, or at least speaking to your insurer on the phone to negotiate ways to reduce your bill, e.g. pay a higher excess. You could be paying for things you don't need, or perhaps not receiving a loyalty bonus. The Barefoot Investor quotes that only 7% of Australians have the right level of insurance. Some companies will drop their price to keep you as a customer. Be careful, as some insurance companies offer a honeymoon deal for a year, then bump up the price. Also, the quotes are rarely like for like, so you do have to read the PDS booklets in excruciating detail to compare the policies. The top line 2-page summary is not enough to compare. Be aware that sometimes it is worth paying a bit more for better service. I've just taken my own advice and knocked almost $200 off my contents insurance, staying with the same company, so call. For an independent comparison of private health policies, go to privatehealth.gov.au. Sometimes paying bills with direct debit attracts a discount, but you have to weigh that up against increased vigilance with your statements to check what you're paying. Only withdraw money from an ATM that is free. Do the numbers on your car. Work out if it is cheaper in the long run to trade in your old car for a demo model or young second-hand car, which will hold its value longer and not require major repairs. Do your homework online. At around the 5-year mark, cars' values depreciate rapidly. My car has the zip and flare of a chest freezer, but it is reliable and I've looked after it well, so I plan to keep it until it dies. Money is a terrible master, but an excellent servant. P.T. Barnum. For savings on smaller things, stock up on genuine supermarket bargains. I switched to shopping at Aldi, which is on average 1/3 cheaper than the other main supermarkets. Always check the unit price on the tag at the supermarket. Even if something is on sale, it doesn't always mean it's the cheapest option. Sign up to voucher and coupon sites, but keep a separate email address for them so you don't get inundated. Look at Ozbargain, for example. Look out for discount movie vouchers from telcos and health funds. Use the discounts you get with your insurer and sign up to LastTix, which sells last-minute tickets to plays and shows, sometimes reduced by 50%. Before you buy from websites like ASOS, check their social media sites for discount codes, or just Google the company name plus discount code. I got 30% off my first internet order from a stationery company this way. You can get free cuts in hair salons that are looking for models. Find them on Gumtree. Your money is too precious to give away. Hold on to it with the grip of a python. Don't lend money to anyone or agree to co-sign anything. No is a complete sentence. Good relationships do not involve money. Finally, put aside a bit of treat money so that you can splurge guilt-free. Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants. Epictetus. 9. Saving and investing. This is where you reach a fork in the road. Once you have repaid debts, worked out your budget, and simplified your banking, turn your thoughts to saving and investing. I'm not a financial expert, and this book can only give general advice, but investment is a key part of your financial blueprint. Along with The Barefoot Investor, the most straightforward, Understands Me book I have read on the subject, is A Man Is Not a Financial Plan by Joan Baker. Like The Barefoot Investor, it is written by an Australian for the local market, so all the examples are relevant. Joan Baker outlines the three types of investment that deliver a passive income. Interest-bearing deposit accounts, business, including shares, property. Which direction you take is up to you. Although they are not mutually exclusive, people tend to fall into one of two camps. There are those who spread savings around a range of investments, including deposits, bonds, and super funds, which are reasonably safe and should increase wealth by a modest amount. Traditionally, they would give a return of less than 5%, but with interest rates so low at present, it could be much less. This is more savings than investment. Small risk, small rewards. As Robert G. Allen said, how many millionaires do you know who have become wealthy by investing in savings accounts? I rest my case. If you want to be more than just all right and be wealthy, you need to take the other path and actively invest. That means buying and selling shares or investing in property. Both have greater risks attached, and you have to get cracking, as the sooner you get going, the better. The longer you leave it, the harder it is to make substantial gains. You will also need to find people you really trust to help you. One route isn't necessarily better than the other. You need to decide which is best for you, taking into account your age. The older you are, the less risk you can afford, and how actively you want to be involved. If you choose the second route, it may involve borrowing. Most people who are serious about investing have to borrow. Obviously, this decreases your disposable income in the short term, as you repay the loan plus interest, but will increase your capital in the long term, as you can invest in assets you would not have been able to afford otherwise. I am wary of borrowing, but understand the concept of good borrowing or good debt. Borrowing with the expectation of making a larger profit than if you hadn't. In his book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, it's better than it sounds, T. Harv Eker goes as far as to say, I can't overemphasize the importance of creating passive income structures. It's simple. Without passive income, you can never be free. Gulp. Time to turn to the professionals. 10. Build a financial team. Finance is one area where it is definitely better not to go it alone when it comes to advice. Inform and arm yourself, and then build a team of independent professionals to advise you. A financial advisor, an accountant, if you have a complicated tax return, otherwise do it yourself online with the ATO, a lawyer, plus, if necessary, a tax specialist, broker, and risk advisor. Some people rely on the advice of friends. I wouldn't advise that on so many levels. The best way to find a good accountant or financial advisor is usually through personal recommendation. Assuming they are properly registered and accredited, you'll still need to interview your team, as independent professionals vary wildly in quality of advice and how they are remunerated, e.g. commission from the policies they sell, which will influence their advice. There are as many bad as good people in this area, so be very, very careful who you trust. It is also such a personal subject that I think it is important you have a rapport with your financial advisors. You will find lists of potential questions online or in books to ask when you interview them. Go in with your eyes open and don't accept their advice or give them any money unless and until you feel completely comfortable. In order to get the best advice from them, do as much of your homework and preparation, your financial blueprint, in advance so that you make the most of the time you have with them when the clock is ticking. There are so many scammers out there. I learned the hard way. I fell foul of an unscrupulous financial advisor in London. I was sucked in because the company's point of difference was that they specialized in advising women. Ha! The empathetic female advisor was paid on commission and sold me several poor investments. I was too preoccupied with work to keep an eye on it, and I lost a lot of money, which I could do with now. So caveat emptor or buyer beware, I still kick myself for being so naive. Annual income £20, annual expenditure £19.19 and 6. Result, happiness. Annual income £20, annual expenditure £20.00 and 6. Result, misery. Mr. Micawber in David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. October. This is one of the peculiarly dangerous months to speculate in stocks. The others are July, January, September, April, November, May, March, June, December, August, and February. Mark Twain, Pudd'nhead Wilson. 11. Essential documents and backing up. When you live by yourself, it is important that you have all your documents up to date and make sure someone you trust knows where they are. Put them all together in a folder. No, I'm not thinking of the cat eating your corpse scenario. It's just common sense. Don't be one of the 50% of the population who don't have a will. Do it. You will need to name your executor and beneficiaries. It's too important not to employ the state trustees or a lawyer to write it. Keep a copy in a safe place. Your lawyer will also keep a copy. You'll also need to nominate an executor and enduring power of attorney to enable someone to act on your behalf in the event of mental incapacity. I have two old and trusted friends for this, and I put money aside in my will to cover their costs. Add their details, along with your financial advisor, lawyer, accountant, etc., to the folder. Make sure you have specific nominations of who will receive your super. These names have to be restated every 3 years with your super provider. Keep your passports in the folder. Photocopy the key pages and keep them separately. Citizenship, legal documents such as birth certificate, and a photocopy of the contents of your wallet, or your cards. Keep separate lists of your bank accounts, super funds, and their binding nominations, shares, and share registry details, and the passwords to all your key sites. Change passwords regularly. Keep copies of all insurance policies in the folder. Don't forget to back up your computer and phone onto an external hard drive regularly. And for extra safety, back up your photos onto a USB stick. Every time I've been in the Apple store, there's someone in tears because they didn't. I go through all these folders annually and keep them up to date. Feeling better organized? 12. Taking action. When it comes to your finances, the 80-20 Pareto principle applies. Successful finances are about 20% knowledge and 80% action. If you don't take any action at all, your financial situation will probably worsen. So even if you just change your super fund to one with a good track record and lower fees, you'll be ahead of the game. When you finish reading this, get into gear. You have to actively manage your money and take an interest in it, because no one else will care as much as you do. I appreciate that it can be confronting and easy to postpone, but shift your mindset into confident mode, and in the space of a couple of hours, you will have examined your optimal banking, super, insurer, and other provider arrangements. Your financial blueprint will be finished, and you can have made some appointments with experts and bought a copy of The Barefoot Investor. I can hardly think of anything more satisfying. Well done, you. Takeaways. Being in control of your finances is critical, so write your financial blueprint. Think. How you treat your